Great.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and call this finance meeting to order. With this, Beth Mars representing Kelly, representing Foster, myself, Chairman Meyer, and Vice Chairman Stoltz. And today we're going to have a presentation from Commissioner Campbell on fish and game management. With that, sir, I will give the floor to you.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity. And what I hope to do is just take a little bit of your time to go over what we believe Alaska gets back for its investment in fish and wildlife management. And basically, we did this after I had come back a year ago to the department, and we were talking about what was at least among some groups out on the public, among others, that lack of realization in terms of what Alaska really does. We regard actually the Department of Fish and Game as a profit center for the state. Our mission is to protect and maintain the fish, the game, the aquatic plant resources, the management and development for maximum development, and for people to stay consistent with the sustained yield principle. In every other slide after this, I'm going to be basically talking about numbers. About specifically for dollars in, what we get for dollars out. But on this slide, I wanted to talk a little bit about what I think fish and wildlife are in large part the soul of Alaska. It is why a great many of us actually live here. And we use fish and wildlife for food, for families, for personal use, for hunting, for wildlife. The benefits it brings are spread throughout the state. Anchorage, for instance, is the home of more commercial fishermen than anywhere else in the state. In rural areas, fishing and hunting are a way of life for many, in addition to providing needed employment. I was having a conversation with Jim Bowles, who's at ConocoPhillips, and they had done a survey among the employees of ConocoPhillips, and they have over the years supported many endeavors in Anchorage. We said they wanted to be supportive. What was important to their employees, and along with a good job, it was the hunting, the fishing, the outdoor opportunities that Alaska provides. That was the principal reason that their employees live in Alaska. Alaska fish and wildlife, we believe, I mentioned the profit center. We do this as a profit center for the state. The licenses, permits, tags, fisheries, business taxes, guide license fees, commercial fishing, sport, fishing occupations, all of these. And there's a tremendous amount indirectly. The purchase of boats, vehicles. Those of you who have been to the Anchorage Sportsman Show and seen the whole Sullivan Center, totally full of fish and wildlife-related businesses there. And in fact, fish and wildlife together provide more jobs by a large margin than any other sector of Alaska's economy. That used to be a claim that just commercial fishing by itself made. There is now, I saw a study this summer questioning whether tourism or commercial fishing had more folks, and I will say they were putting in direct employment in commercial fishing and about four multipliers down in tourism. But regardless, when you start adding up commercial fishing, sport fishing, hunting, all of these things, what you have is thousands and thousands and thousands of small businesses, and they're scattered throughout the state. In many ways, when we deal with oil or we deal with mining, we deal with big monolithic companies, and so it's very hard to miss the presence. BP or Conoco or Placer Dome, those are all outstanding companies. The very fact that we have so many small businesses scattered through Alaska sometimes makes them sort of so woven into the warp and weft of our society that they're not as visible. And many of them are also woven out or scattered out through rural Alaska where sometimes they're not visible. But where is what we believe is that where they're actually much more important to our state's overall economy, because it is relatively easy, all things considered, to have economic development in Anchorage. It's very tough to have economic development in Hokiak or Chuuk or some of these places. In this past issue, the current issue from the Department of Labor, they're talking about the resurgence of commercial fishing over the last couple of years. It mentions that throughout Southeast, South Central, and Southwest, and particularly in Southwest, without the jobs provided by the fishing industry, many of those towns would actually shrivel up, because all the other sources of employment there, whether it be construction or healthcare, whatever, all basically grow out of that industry. And so the question is, what are we getting? We as Alaskans, what are we getting for the money that we invest in fish and wildlife? One of the things we got is we have rebuilt decimated salmon fisheries. We have, from the early 70s, when we were having substantial problems with salmon returns throughout the state, we've gotten back to a point where in this past year, for only the third time ever, we've had over 200 million salmon returns. And the vast majority of the state, salmon are doing very well. There are a couple of notable exceptions. And right now, our returns to the northern district of Cook Inlet, up into the Matsu, for sockeye, we have some serious concerns. And actually, there's a capital increment, first ever from fish and wildlife, from com fish and sport fish together to address that. But overall, we're very proud of our record of management. This is one of the reasons we became a state to be able to do this. Commercial fisheries, economic benefits of the state. It's one of the largest private sector employers. I've talked about this before. 14% of all Southeast jobs, 18% of all Gulf Coast jobs, over half of all Southwest Alaska jobs. And again, those are the jobs that anchor the community and let the other support industry jobs be possible. In 2004, over 15,200 jobs, 34,200 peak season. Come on in. There's pizza right there.
Doesn't look like I eat pizza.
Looks like you need to.
You do.
basically, 17,000 peak jobs. In raw fish tax, this provides a substantial source of income to coastal communities throughout Alaska, as well as providing substantial amounts of money back to the general fund. And frankly, one of the ways people throughout the United States or worldwide know Alaska is through our seafood consumption. In terms of economic benefits to the state, we have 2005, $3.5 billion for the first wholesale seafood value of Alaska seafood, $1.3 billion seafood X vessel, over $53 million coming back to states and communities through raw fish tax and other directly related taxes. In terms of international exports, seafood is by far our largest international export, $2.46 billion. And it is steadily trending up. It's over half of the international exports that we have. And then I want to talk about sport fish. I often am adverse to the term world class as an adjective. I think it's heavily overused. But I have to say, there isn't another appropriate adjective for our sports fisheries. It's renowned for the most abundant, diverse fly fishing, saltwater fishing, freshwater fishing in the world. And in terms of benefits back to the state, generated over $14.8 million, bought over 512,000 licenses sold. Over 187 of those were to residents, and 324,000 of those were to non-residents. I'm going to kind of come back and touch on the impacts on the tourism industry. And that's 324,000 non-residents there. In 2003. Anglers directly spent $640 million in Alaska. They generated 12,000 jobs, over 259 million wages. And the impact, once you add in the multipliers, was well over $1 billion in direct sport fishing related spending in Alaska this year.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What percent of the resource allocation is that sport fish produces that amount?
What percent
of the total?
You mean how many of fish to the sport fish versus
fish? The fish that are allocated to the producers, what percent is that?
I do not
under
have,
10 or
yeah.
over 10?
I don't have the exact answer. It obviously varies widely state by state. It is a fairly small percentage.
State by state?
Region by region, pardon me. It is a fairly small percentage that does it. And one of the questions that's always asked in terms of, and is it an issue the board is dealing with allocation issues, is at what point do the dollars in the sport fishery produce more income for the state, the dollars in the fish and commercial fishery?
and at what point you just decline, and at what point you have fish that simply aren't of interest to the sport fisher. So those are all questions that we argue about, that many people argue about at the allocation issue report.
Just statewide, is it under 10%? If it's a single digit, even if it's a high single digit?
Let me stare back at the director's estimate. 10% sounds ballpark figure.
But what I will do is I will get an answer for you and provide it to you.
That 1 out of 10 fish produces that $1 billion number.
I'm guessing that it's a smaller percentage than that.
Smaller percentage, yeah. It could be 1 out of 20, or
it could be. But
I'm just trying to get a handle of some of these. I'm not a fisheries expert, so I'm just
Probably becomes a more relevant issue question when you focus on fish that are interest to sport fishers. Salmon, halibut, for instance, don't focus on pickup, pollock, cod, things like that. But we'll get you some percentages and breakdowns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sure.
Again, we provide in Alaska unique, remarkable big game hunting destinations with no other location offered, and provide outstanding hunting opportunities. In 2004, Alaska hunting and trapping licenses generated nearly $3 million, $133,700 sold. And of those are predominantly resident versus non-resident. That's a shift from the sport fishing. But we do, simpler sport fishing, generate much more money from our non-resident fees than we do from our resident fees. In terms of direct economic benefits to the state, in 2001, we had 93,000 hunters, 1.1 million days hunting. We generated $270 million in directly related expenditures. The Alaska big game guiding industry, big game guides, assistant guides, transporters, et cetera, directly employ over 2,300 employees. And again, these are just thousands of small businesses that I'm talking about. For subsistence, virtually every community in Alaska has residents who participate in hunting, fishing, and gathering for domestic use, whether rural, what we consider rural and urban communities. And in many cases, people rely on this opportunity to meet their food and protein needs. In terms of the annual subsistence harvest, it's in excess of 53 million pounds, and minimum replacement value sometime in the neighborhood of $500 million, along with the traditions of spiritual and cultural connections of self-reliance that are reinforced through these practices. I also mentioned tourism. We believe wildlife watching and sport fishing are two of the greatest attractions for bringing tourists to Alaska. Last year, we hosted over 1.5 million summer visitors in Alaska. If you go and you look at the rack of brochures in any airport that advertise various tourism, or if you just go right here, this is the Alaska Tourism Industry Association homepage. Anywhere you go, you'll see that fishing and hunting and wildlife watching is what they are advertising to bring tourists up here. In terms of just the wildlife watching portion of the tourism, not the general tourism, but the folks who are here very specifically taking wildlife watching tours, we believe that wildlife watching generated over 39,000 jobs. The ecotourism that traveled $1.6 billion, and in wildlife viewing, 565,000 individuals, or 1 in 3 Alaska visitors, specifically engaged in wildlife viewing. I've been talking about sort of broad generalities, and I want to kind of wrap up, or begin to wrap up, with just a case study. And this past summer, I tried to get around to as many areas in the state as I could where we have fisheries, where we have hunts, where we have our offices, talking to people, talking to our constituents. I was out on Kodiak for 3 days. Wednesday and Friday, spent all day long talking to our staff, the fishermen's associations, the processors, different groups, the borough, et cetera. But on Thursday, we got in a small plane, and Dimpy Roy, who's our Tomfish director now, was the area manager there at the time. And we flew over, stopping and looking at various fisheries that were happening all around the island at the time. And we stopped at Fraser Lake. In Fraser Lake, there are falls at the bottom of the lake, and you can see them up above this bear. There's some small falls that blocked fish from being able to go up and down the lake. But actually, all the way back in the late 50s, people realized the potential for that lake. And so, back in the 50s, they planted the first eggs there. They actually backpacked returning fish around the falls for a while. And in the early 60s, we spent just shy of $110,000 to build a weir, for craw that stops the sockeye and a fish ladder where they can then go up past the falls. And this is what we get for that. Along with that initial investment, we annually spend about $50,000 to run that operation. It gives us a fish biologist, one, and a tech who spent several months out there each summer. They count the fish, they repair the weir. They repair the weir from the damage that's done by the big surge in the brown bear population that's happened over the last 40-some years in response to the fish. And in terms of what we, for our $50,000 a year annual investment, get, we get over $1.2 million commercial harvest that not only supports, you know, families, supports villages, but also returns substantial funds to the state and to the Kodiak Island Borough and raw fish tax. We get about $250,000 direct spending on sport fishing. There are a number of high-end lodges, $750 a night is the minimum night stay you can find out there. And people fly in and fly fish. This group that you see right here was from Illinois. There was another group while we were there that was from California. And for the sports fishing. We also, I mentioned the abundance of bears that have grown up during that time. While we were there, there were two different groups of about a dozen people each watching the bears. And in terms of direct spending right there in the borough for bed and breakfasts, for the fly-in services, for the guide services to watch the bears, they're spending about $500,000 a year right there to watch the bears. Also, spring and fall, they're in the abundance of bears. They're big boars that don't come down to that area very often, but are certainly there because the abundance of bears tend to come at night. But those big bears are hunted spring and fall, and we return about just shy of $200,000 directly to the economy there. It costs about $20,000 for one of those hunts. The nearest native village there is Akiak, and we've more than doubled the subsistence opportunities for sockeye in that area there, made that available to them. Altogether, for our initial $100,000 investment, about $50,000 a year, we're getting about $2.1 million back every year in annual return. We think that is a good investment, and the range and the scope of the way we get it back, I think, is an excellent illustration. In terms of where the money comes from that we invest to do this management, I want to make several points here. The first is that in terms of general funds, this is only approximately 22% that we are spending or bringing back in. And again, as I said, I think we directly to the state and communities are generating over $55 million in general funds that come back there. We have about 40% of our budget is from federal receipts. We have fish and game funds, hunting licenses, fishing licenses, about just shy of $27 million. One of the things I should mention here, when I first came back, I looked at how the funds from the Fish and Wildlife Fund were being used. And because of the pretty dramatic cuts that had happened to the department over the preceding decade, some of those funds were being used in ways that were entirely illegal, but frankly, I felt were not appropriate. They were not being used to give the best benefit to the hunters and fishermen who paid those fees. We have changed how we do that to make sure that every licensed dollar paid by a hunter or fisherman is going back so we can show the direct benefit to hunters or fishermen. We have also tried to be extraordinarily transparent about this. One of the things that we have done is posted on the front page of our website. If you go there, there's a link that says budgets. If you click there, there's about a 10 to 12 page summary, one for the sport fish division, one for the wildlife division, and you can go through that summary and see how those funds are used. In addition, we've delivered to this committee and the Senate Finance Committee at the start of the session a,
I don't know, 20 plus page time?
Spreadsheet that goes through line by line by line on how all those funds are being used. We want to be very transparent on that. So I won't belabor this other than I will come back for a moment and talk about the federal funds as a problem. And that's the risk of relying on federal funds. As I said, it's about 40% of our budget. Over the, again, over the last 10 years of general funds in the budget have declined. The department has relied more and more on the success of Senator Stevens to be able to help us fund things. And right now, we are running substantial portions of our day-to-day management on federal funds. The difficulty with that is, as you all have all seen, those federal funds are sharply declining. These are not, I want to emphasize, this is something new we did with the federal government said, here, why don't you all do this, we'll give you some money. So we've been able to use federal funds to fund some of our basic day-to-day tasks. But as all of you have probably seen, those funds are in sharp decline. You may have seen the headlines of Senator Stevens getting after NIMS about their lack, or the way they treated Alaska in the budget. Well, an awful lot of those funds passed directly through that budget. And this year, that is a particular concern to us, because as we handle our base adjustment, we tried to be very upfront about we were trying to address that with general funds. It has been suggested that we allocate the base adjustment based on funding sources. The difficulty is we have no, not only don't have any ability to go to the federal government and say, why don't you give us a couple million more so we can do your portion of the base adjustment. Actually, those funds are going sharply down, so we're going to have to deal with that. Also, to the extent we rely on any other federal funds, those sometimes comes with strings. And in some cases, those strings we're not willing to accept for the sake of the state. Bottom line, and this is the end, we believe that fish and wildlife are a renewable resource that can and will provide sustained economic benefits for future generations. That we feel for our budget, in the neighborhood of $150 million, we're producing a direct return for all the multipliers and anything else between $5 and $6 billion to Alaska's economy. That we are inherently a user pay outfit. And I have to say, this is a point of some contention between us and some of our user groups. There are many of our user groups, the Outdoor Council, UFA, others, who say, look, there should be more general funds going into the department. We take some pride in this being a user pay outfit, and so we are trying to keep to that, hold that line to the extent possible. But for every dollar invested in our budget, there's about $35 that's coming back directly into Alaska's economy. I would say if I could go find that kind of deal on the stock market, I would love it. I would love to do it. So anyway, basically, we all feel we have the responsibility to ensure sustainable resources for the management of future generations. And these are the folks we want to grow up, and we want to make sure that we have these resources there for them. And that is it, and I thank you very much and appreciate the opportunity to give this to you. If it's a question, I'm happy to answer. If not, there's a lot of people out there.
Appreciate the presentation. I was just commenting, that looks like a fish that Representative Schnell can catch.
I explained to him that was just bait fish there.
All right.
Where I come from.
It's very informative, very interesting. Any questions for the commissioner? Appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you very much. I know you'll be talking to you in a much more detailed setting on issues, particular issues in the budget, but I just want to make this point because we really do believe we are a profit center for Alaska. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for the presentation. Representative Kelly has a question.
Just one thing, on those slides right up front, one of the, I did finally wait to see where a trapping photo was, and we got one of them in there, but I've suggested when you redo that that you might stick that up in the front to make a few of those trappers feel a little bit better.
I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Let's do that.
And you, once it, you for the general fund portion, that was 30, was it 34 out of the 156?
The general fund is,
I think it was 34.
It's about 20 right here. General fund is 33.8, which is 21.66%.
Okay, the Fed's 40. And you now have a pretty good handle on the designated funds, and so if we ask for that, can we get that, like one where the fifth one all over?
We would be happy to give it again. If you do have it, you can access it three ways. One, if you click on the web, it's on our front page, and click on budgets, you'll see about a 10 or 12 page summary, both delivered to this committee, and we have to provide
a
copy of the full spreadsheets.
I'm glad to see that. That was something that was kind of a, you know, an annual problem there for a while.
I believe letters of Fishman deserve to know exactly how the money gets spent. And we feel comfortable that in every case we can go through and can say this is being spent for your project.
Thank you.
I should say we have the EBOS funds in here. The $156 million includes the 4.2 EBOS funds, but that's there. It's there administratively. It doesn't do near as much as it should, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of yield and return and in terms of fish product.
Sure. Thanks. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the current status of the halibut? Cues for the charters. What you know, I understand you spoke on the Matt Sue where you're getting them. What happened and what's the next step?
I'll try to do the short version. What happened is there was an IFQ program for charter halibuts that went to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, which I said on. The council voted that particular plan down, and I believe the overwhelming reason they voted it down is the National Marine Fisheries have been basically sitting on it for about 6 years. The Magnuson Act requires any such rationalized fishery to reflect present participation in the fishery, and we felt fairly sure if we were setting up something just legally, we'd immediately get overturned. Instead, what we've done is put together a stakeholders group. This includes charter operators, both pro IFQ and newer entrants who are opposed to IFQ, commercial operators, subsistence folks, and they are looking at two alternatives. One alternative would be an IFQ-based plan. The other alternative would be a percentage. And that percentage would float up and down with abundance, and that portion of the percentage would be the charter sector share. And the concept is there would be a halibut charter stamp that charter fishermen would pay and which charter fishing for halibut would buy, and that money would then be used to buy share from longliners, from willing sellers, extinguish those shares, and move those shares or the pound equivalent over into the sport allocation. They're working through on both of those models. They're going to come back to the council, then they'll go through analysis and do either one. In both cases, we want to make sure that one, a mechanism for the charter industry to be able to grow, but be able to grow in a way that compensates the commercial folks exists, and that it exists not just legally, but economically, it really works. I think we have all parties on board with the track in which we're progressing. I don't know. I won't say that in terms of where we ultimately wind up.
Anybody else? Okay. Representative Keller.
On the Predator Robus article recently about not having sufficient funds to continue the Predator program at the rate that it's being demanded by all the various areas of the state. What was the message there?
Well,
There was some context. I think I read that article as well and talked to folks, and I think everything they said there that was accurate, I don't think it was anyway quoted, but I would, there were some additional parts of that that I wish had come through. The context is when we as a department believe in the predator control programs, but we also, you know, hope the legislature realizes that when they created the intensive management law, in some ways it created an unfunded mandate. We believe in these programs. The key to these programs succeeding and continuing to win in court is to have the good science to back them up. Right now, we are supporting programs in five areas. We had a tremendous outpouring request for greatly expanded all over the state. Frankly, way beyond the scope of anything we have the ability to fund. What we do hope to do is next year, as a department, and I say we, because I don't have any idea if I'm here or any other, but as a department, we do hope to come to the legislature and talk about or request a hunting license increase. We've been working closely with the AOC and others on this. I think as long as they are remain convinced that benefit will go directly to things they care about, they'll be very supportive of that. We did a lot, some talking with legislators and the governor's office. We decided not to try to do that this year, but we do have some funding in the Wildlife Conservation Department that actually will act as sort of a bridge until we get that revenue stream coming in. If you pass it next year, it'll still be 6 months to a year before you have the revenue stream coming in.
Okay.
That was the context in which you were explaining that.
Now the program, couple things, Mr. Chairman, if I might. The are you using the public to the maximum extent possible on that? I mean, I've seen a lot of change there, so I assume that one of the places to go to make it cost you less is more use of those guys and gals in the Super Cups, and I assume you're doing that, and that if it needs another layer of farming out, because they'll do it essentially at no cost, whereas the old, going clear back to the helicopters, state employees and all of that, it was the most expensive way of doing it. Are we as far over to the private sector way of doing it as you think we can reasonably get?
I think we're almost there, and we are continuing to explore a few other options to get it further. It is interesting that in the issue of how we do this, we have some people who are really, really pro-predator control who wants to be out there in helicopters, department employees, and then we have people, you know, one of the things that's the latest initiative we've done is we said predator control can only be done by department employees, you know, et cetera. The problem is, A, that prices us out of the ability to do it, and B, it does, as you said, it arouses national attention. I think by farming this out to individuals who are acting as agents of the state in a way has been very effective. It has kept the level of national opposition down. I think that's been very, very helpful to us. There are some things we're looking at, certain issues where can we make it easier to harvest certain bears, holes or things like that, and expand that a little more. And I think there's a little more we can go if we're trying to get there.
Okay, and the other thing is, do we need to make a law change on the difficulty of doing it? That appears to be in regulation, not in law.
Our advice from the Department of Law is right now they strongly urge no changes. And we have talked about if folks are interested in arranging for a confidential briefing on the status of the legal aspects of the case, but they recommend right now not. And we feel our main threat to the program right now is more from the Federal Airborne Hunting Act than state law. One of the things we are doing, we currently have a board meeting right now where we have all these proposals up.
Department of Law has asked us, rather, we thought we could just take these emergency regs, which we implemented, in light of the court decision, and simply make it permanent. And I should say simply, we put in folks in the division, put in tremendous amount of time, weekends, and nights and stuff getting ready. But they want us to resubmit the entire record, enhance it, and we're going to have a special meeting of the game in May to do this with the enhanced record and the strongest legal person, the strongest legal position to build. It costs us about an extra $10,000 every meeting because we're done. And okay. There will be no breaking programs.
Because if it's something, I mean, read the Robus article, it occurred that maybe the private sector thing, you've already answered that, then maybe the regulations need to be changed a little bit because it's not intensive, man. It's, for a lot of years here, it's just part of the management thing, and maybe we're getting back to that. And then the third thing was, is it something we need to do? So at least if we do, coming out of that Robus article, I certainly think you can tell us in specific. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I guess I apologize. I apologize. She's not like I have to back to you.
It's quite all right, sir. I just had one question. You mentioned that we have some of the best big game hunting anywhere in the world, right here in Alaska. And how does our out-of-state hunting licenses compare, like, to other states? And can you raise the out-of-state license without raising the in-state license?
The answers are, I believe, we look very closely at all of our out-of-state licenses. On the whole, we are a little higher than average, but there are other states that are higher than us. It varies species by species. We definitely want to look at, as I said, we want to look at bumping the non-residents up very definitely. One of the issues under the U.S. Constitution is the proportionality between the residents and the non-resident license fees. And to raise the non-resident fees without raising the resident fees puts us into difficult legal waters. So right here we have 119,000 residents, 14,700 non-residents. These 14,700 pay the bulk of the operating budget. They are substantially more than 119,000 there. But we definitely want to pump them up. We did consider a non-resident only fee this year, and frankly, because I thought that if we did that, we would probably never be able to for a long time before we come back and get a resident fee. And again, users state quite are pretty supportive of this as long as they see they're getting something for it. I just for interest, and this was in that Rose article that was mentioned. A hunting license now, if you adjust for inflation, costs less than half of what it costs to state.
Very good.
I personally think an Alaska fishing resident fishing hunting license is one of the best bargains in the world.
Yes, it is. President Stoltz has a question.
On the 137,000 of licenses sold, are those all full fare licenses? Does that include the reduced rate licenses?
Some of them do include reduced fare licenses, yes. The $5.
And is that a significant portion?
I will get that for you as well.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions for the commissioner while he's here? If not, he's welcomed us to help ourselves to the pizza, which is
yes,
very generous.
Please.
Thank you very much.
Please, thank you.
You can come back again tomorrow if you want.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Did you find a movie out of committee?
Movie out of committee.
Pizzas or?
If there's nothing else coming for the committee, then we're adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Do we have to declare a close economic tie?
You're pretty cool.
With the pizza.
And food and beverage for immediate consumption.
Huh?
Immediate consumption.
Immediate consumption.
Close economic tie with almost all pizza.